Hello, how are you doing?
I'm just fine. Give me a moment, please. I need to adjust some of my settings so I don't go deaf. Oh my God, that's loud.
I'm sorry I could not make it be there in person. I had intended to, but. Hello, Grace.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Same here. Missed you last week.
I was there.
We didn't have any meat bagels for
last
week.
Oh, that's right. Right. Yes.
One moment, everyone. Well, I will say that if it's only going to be me in the office, I'm going to turn off the owl. Turn the volume down and it's going to deafen me in just a moment.
Sue, how are you doing? Sue?
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Are you okay?
Well, you know, I don't know how to turn the owl's volume up and down.
Oh, wow.
I can mute it. Oh, there it is. I found it. It's on the back. Plus and minus. Someone had turned the volume all the way up. And I swear a deaf person could hear it without a hearing aid.
Ooh.
It was ear piercingly loud. It was like an ice pick in my brain, to be honest. Okay. That's enough of that. Okay. Well, now I know. Look at the device all the way around and there are buttons. So it looks like this may be it for us for now. And if anyone comes late, that's okay. Forgive me for missing next week and last week. Last week was for a migraine. Next week, I need to be at my parish all day. So we will pick up the first Wednesday in April. That will be our next meeting time. So we are... We are in the Gospel of Thomas, and I put my bookmark in Logion 2. I don't know if that's because that's where we ended or that's where we need to pick up.
I think it's where we ended. You agree, Grace and Sue? We should do number 3 next.
I think we ended on 2, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we may have 2 also.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Does anyone want to read to us saying number 3?
Sure.
I love it when everybody jumps and says, I'll read. So I'm just going to pick one of you. Sue, how do you feel like reading?
I don't have a copy was what I was saying.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, just so you know, you can look at the email that Jeanette sent a little while ago.
I tried to do that and I couldn't find it. I don't know what happened to it.
You couldn't make it work? Oh, no.
No.
Okay. Well, I'll see if we can print one out for you and leave it at the church.
Oh, okay.
Did I bring a pen out here with me? No, I didn't.
So
I'm going to try really hard to remember this.
I know that feeling too well.
All right. Then Jeanette, would you be willing to read for us?
Yes.
I can't hear.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jeanette. You gotta look at the microphone.
Okay. How is it pronounced? Is it Logion or Logion or what?
I pronounce it Logion.
Logion. Okay. Okay. Logion 3. Yeshua said, if those who, can you understand me? Okay. If those who guide you say, look, the kingdom is in the sky, and the birds are closer than you. If they say, look, it is in the sea, then the fish already know it. The kingdom is inside you, and it is outside you. When you know yourself, then you will be known, and you will know that you are the child of the living Father. But if you do not know yourself, you will live in vain, and you will be vanity. This is the version that's in this book, by the way.
So let's let that Logion number 3 sink in for a moment of silence for the introverts among us. All right, what jumps out at you in Logion number 3?
I love Logion number 3. I have for so long wondered what is meant by the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And I think this is wonderful, especially the phrase that says the kingdom is inside you and it is outside. Because it being this the kingdom within you, it's this the Holy Spirit working in you. And if it's outside, that's wonderful because it's kind of like the communion of saints. It is the Holy Spirit working, you know, among other people and in a community or not a community. But I really love this Logion number 3. I think it is wonderful. It really speaks to me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm always struck by how in this Logion, Jesus addresses the delightful literalism of people who are like, what the hell are you talking about? What do you mean by that? And, you know, if the kingdom is in the sky, then the birds are closer than you are. Neener. And if they say, look, it's in the sea, then the fish knew it before you knew it. And how can that be? The kingdom is inside you, and it's outside you.
Sarah, Liz, could you take your glasses off, your sunglasses off?
Honestly, no.
Oh, okay. I wanted to see your eyes.
Right now, my eyes hurt.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I only wear sunglasses when I'm feeling kind of migrainy, and
ooh, okay.
I can largely control it now. Sure. But then something happens and my eyeballs feel like someone's just stabbed them with something.
Yeah.
So
my apologies.
That's all right. When I feel comfortable, I will take the glasses off. So Sue, you were able to hear it for the first time, which is not always ideal because it's always good to see it too. Was there anything that jumped out at you in your hearing of it?
That as humans, we seem to be the last to figure things out. God created all of it. All of it seems to know what's going on except us. And we have to struggle through a mess of words and entanglements to figure it out. There's so many things that I have read recently that talk about the trees talking to themselves, a tree roots sustaining other things besides their individual self. And I tend to think about it in terms of myself as a person, how I try to sustain myself. But if my roots aren't reaching out beyond myself, I'm not sustaining myself very well. I get weaker and weaker. And so all of these things I've been reading about, trees whispering, trees singing, trees showing the movement of the wind, which often to me signifies the movement of God amongst us in the breath of the Spirit, that sort of thing. It just seems to me that we're very slow on the uptake as human beings, and we are supposed to have such a big brain.
Donna, what are your impressions of this saying of Jesus?
Did you say Donna? She's not here.
I'm sorry, Grace. What am I thinking? Sorry, Grace.
Donna.
Well, I'm just rereading the last half where it's talking about knowing yourself, and if you don't know yourself, you'll dwell in poverty. And I was trying to put that in today's world, and I'm struggling with that right now. Where I do know myself, but I don't get the part about poverty.
One of the things I think about that, and I like that idea that you could translate it vain and vanity, or you can translate it poor and poverty. I think of that old saying, and Jesus has parables along these lines, but I also like this saying that, well, it's a little story. I'll tell you a little story. So a poor man is sitting on a box and begging, and someone comes along and says, I can't give you anything, but have you looked inside the box? And the poor man says, ain't nothing in this box, friend. I'm just sitting on it. It's just a convenient place to sit. But can you help me? Can you give me what I need? And the guy who's walking past says, I don't have anything to give you that you don't already have, but have you looked inside the box? And this goes on for some time. And eventually, the guy who's begging, who is poor and in poverty, or if you like, living a vain life of vanity, looks inside the box. And inside the box are all the gifts that God has ever given that person, unopened and unexamined. And that person is us. That person is always us. And it is Jesus walking by who says, I can't give you anything you don't already have. You have all the gifts that you need and all the resources that you could possibly hope for. You already have. You're just sitting on them complaining that your seat is lumpy. And I have reflected in the past week or two to my husband, because we talk about these sorts of things, that's me. I've been sitting on a box complaining that the seat is lumpy. And I've been complaining as long as the day is long. And lo, there in my box, there were, you know, one or two more unexamined gifts. I'd opened it before. I thought I cleared it out. Nope. God gave me even more than I thought. And I feel like I personally have had several moments in my life over the years. And, you know, I'm mid-40s, so I haven't been on this trek as long as y'all. But I've been actively on this trek for a long time, since about the age of 5. And I feel like I've opened that box a bunch of times and found new gifts and thought, okay, the box is empty now. I've got everything now. But then I open the box later and there's more stuff in there.
A gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. And so I don't want to say that all y'all are sitting on boxes with stuff in, but I do want to say, have you checked lately? Because if you haven't checked lately, there may be new levels of gifts in there for you.
Neat.
If the kingdom is inside of us and outside of us, if we take that as possibly true, you know, as a thought experiment, okay, let's do a deep dive into the implications of what this means. Then inside of us, that's, we could call that us. That is who we are, who we really are. It's not just kind of the image of a box that we're sitting on. It's who we really are and who God really made us to be. And so when I hear, not just Grace, but when I hear anyone say, I know myself completely, and they're not visibly enlightened, they are not shining in the image of Jesus and capable of doing miracles, I tend to second guess whether or not they know themselves completely. And I don't mean to be harsh or negative, but we are deep and complex beings. And God's presence in us is deep and complex. And I think I've met people who just shine with that light, that Christ light, and they don't give anything out but light. It doesn't matter if you're mean or nasty. It doesn't matter if you are presenting things that might worry them, like, you know, might worry a normal person, a regular person. They're just going to be happy and love you. And you can't alter their sense of deep joy and deep oneness with God. You can't shake it. They are the unshakable thing because they're so firmly rooted in God. Now, I'll grant you, I haven't met many of these people, but maybe that's the circle of people that I know. Maybe that's a commentary on me. But I do think they exist, and I do think that we can get there. So those are my thoughts.
I don't really think that anybody can know themselves completely. I agree with you that we are more complex than that. And a lot of times what we think of ourselves is not really true, as other people see us as well. You know, I mean, how we see ourselves can be different from how other people. And it's always interesting to try to think about, you know, how do I come across, you know, other people? Because what you think is not always the case. But as I said, I think this is a wonderful concept that the kingdom of God is both within us and external to us, like in other people, in the communion, you know, the community of other believers and non-believers or partial believers. You know, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. And I love what you said, Jeanette, about, oh, I'm sorry, go on, Sue.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, we, even if we feel like we have an understanding of ourselves, it's constantly being revealed to us that there's more of us than we realized, mm-hmm. and that there's more of the others that we've been in contact with than we ever realized, how much more we needed them than we honestly, deeply thought. And it's a constant evolution. We're constantly growing and changing, you know, hopefully for better, but sometimes the failings actually make you stronger in a different direction. But it's a change, and it's a change in you that forces you to be different than what you were, you know, a few minutes ago.
It's an interesting thing in our culture that failure is so frowned upon.
Yes.
I mean, it's not just our culture, but our culture certainly participates.
Definitely ours, yes.
Yeah. Instead of looking at failure as a part of success, it's how you refine what you're doing, realize what doesn't work so that you can go closer to what does work. We look at failure and say, the failure of this project or the failure of this person in their job, we look at that and we kind of, oh, here comes Marilyn. We kind of project that failure of a thing onto the whole person. That person is a failure.
And when I mentioned failure and growing from it, I was thinking of the failure at this point in life of my parts of my body and how that forces you into directions you didn't think you would ever be dealing with. Mm-hmm. So that's our whole culture. The failure of our life is dying, and that makes it a taboo subject, and it makes us avoid thinking about and oh no, I didn't mean talking about death and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's an avoidance thing, but it doesn't change anything. Your body is still going to evolve into that process. And as you keep meeting all those little failures that are part of daily life and have been since you were born, mm-hmm. but because we don't face failure, it just gets swept under the rug and say, well, we all feel that way. And we all experience that.
We have to remember also that failure is not black and white. There's a whole spectrum, you know. I mean, you can fall short a little bit, but be primarily successful at something, you know. It's not just black and white. You have to remember that you know, you can be pretty successful, but not, you know, totally, you know, meeting your own goals.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, hey, Marilyn, welcome to the conversation.
We're just failure averse.
The information to get in. I've been looking for it all this time. Go ahead. Oh, no.
Well, I'm glad you found it, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Me too.
Sue, going back to what you were saying, especially with, you know, the kind of ultimate failure is death, I have two general thoughts about that. One is thinking about an action piece that I just wrote. I do a little weekly newsletter now. And this week's newsletter was generally about fear, but then the action piece was about doing a meditation on the fear of death. And, you know, that just makes me think about this because lots of different philosophic and spiritual traditions encourage us to at least occasionally meditate on our own death. And, you know, St. Paul says, you know, die to death now and get it over with. And we're in the tail end of Lent, or perhaps really just the middle of Lent. But, you know, I plan for Holy Week and I plan for Easter. And
so you're at the end.
I'm emotionally at the end already. And so, you know, Lent is one of those times where we can meditate on our shortcomings, but then Good Friday happens and we're really encouraged to meditate on the death of God. And, you know, depending on the year, I've gone there wholeheartedly and just spent the entire day grieving. I don't necessarily recommend that, but, you know, to each their own. But we certainly do recommend at least occasionally meditating on your own death. And so, you know, in the newsletter, I give a very brief meditation. Do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. Take 5 minutes. You'll be stronger for it. Pardon me. But that sense too, and this is the other part of my reaction, is one of the base conundrums of Christianity is how we relate to death. And it is a mystery of the church, meaning we see it, we recognize it, we name it, we have no idea, really, mechanically how it works. It's a mystery. But one of the mysteries of the church is Christ has died, Christ has risen, Christ will come again. And depending on which liturgy we do on a Sunday morning, we might end up saying that very often in our lives. Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. And there's a lot of discussion in the New Testament about whether or not people who follow Christ will really have to die. 2,000 years later, we notice that Christians die and that Christians die peacefully and painfully, in hope and in fear, in peace and in dread.
But you don't know what happens to your soul. Your soul may not die at all. You don't know.
Enter the mystery.
Yep. Yep.
Enter the mystery. And so, that's an exciting ringtone. And so where we are left with that is we have hope. And yet
okay,
we still struggle with the thought of our own death.
Okay, thank you.
The thought of the death of everyone we love. And the thought of the death of everything we love. From the death of a relationship to the death of a nation, to the death of a church, to the death of an institution we love and support. Mm-hmm. And it's part of this cycle of this present reality that we are a part of. It is terminal for everyone and everything.
So when you recommend that people should consider or think about their death, are you talking about physically, in terms of the soul, mentally, or what?
I am talking about physically in terms of the body. Mm-hmm. The body will die.
Yeah.
I don't encourage people to think strongly, one day my soul will not exist, because I don't actually believe that.
I don't either.
Okay, good. But the particular recommendation that I made this week was to think for a moment and just to hold that thought in your mind, one day I will die,
mm-hmm.
full stop, and let that sit for a moment in your head and just feel it. And then go through the list of everybody you love. One day my sister Rose will die. One day my husband Michael will die. And just list it all out and allow yourself to feel. And if you need to, allow yourself to grieve and to cry, but to face this fear, because this fear is the basic human fear that we all share.
But it's not necessarily all fear. I mean, you have to look forward to time when you're not going to have all these aches and pains. Sometimes I think, I'm going to die. Oh, that's okay with me. Yes. I get up in the morning, I can barely move without hurting all over.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the tricky things about death, right?
Yeah.
Because whether or not the person is like, no, actually, I've lived a good life. I'm in a lot of pain. Let me go. For the love of Jesus, let me go. And yet, when we're dealing with somebody else, and it's someone we love and adore,
mm-hmm.
and they're in pain, then we start really feeling the tension between, I'm so glad they died because they were in such pain and they were ready to go. Mm-hmm. And, oh my God, I'm so upset that they died.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to diminish that incredible intention,
mm-hmm.
because it's very similar. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's very similar to the guilt that survivors have in a tragedy when they weren't the one who died.
Mm-hmm.
And you think they'd just be happy, mm-hmm. but it's complicated.
Yeah. I know exactly what that feels like, because when my husband passed away from cancer a few years ago, I felt exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, I mean, you want him to die and get out of the pain, but my God, you know, I can't live without the man, you know. So it's really, really difficult, really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Sue?
Have any of you read the book on being mortal?
No.
That's a wonderful book. It's written by an Indian doctor living in the United States. And it's on the whole aspect of the Western feelings and taboos about death and the realities of death in our life. And it's just, it's a lovely piece of philosophy on the inevitability of death and living with it peacefully. I have a copy. In fact, when I come, I have a couple of things to pick up at church when I come sometime during the week. I have an extra copy. I should leave it in that little library and anybody could borrow it because I only need one and somebody gave me another one a few years ago. So
I'll borrow it, sure.
Yeah, I'll put it in. It's a highly recommended book from many sources. Several churches that I'm aware of have used it as a study.
Okay. Speaking of highly recommended books, I have another one for you because I know that in general, y'all like to read. This is a brand new book. It's called Flowing Zen, if you can't quite see the title or the book very well. Flowing Zen. And it's by a man named Anthony Korahias. He's got a nice Greek name there, Korahias. And he teaches an internal martial art that heals people. And on page 94, in his book, I am the success story, that is page 94.
Ah.
And so, see, there I am. Calls me by my middle name, Liz. And so, if you would like to try some extremely gentle movement for about 15 minutes a day to help you relieve some of the aches and the pains, this might actually be useful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But yeah. And yet, it's not going to save us from death.
No.
No, indeed. Because that is inevitable in this world.
Finding peace is worth flowing with Zen.
Right. Right. So shall we move on then to saying number four? I'll read this one out for us. Logion 4, Yeshua said, an aged person will not hesitate to ask a seven-day-old infant about the place of life, and that person will live. Many of the first will make themselves last, and they will become one. Let's let that sink in for a moment or two of silence. What jumps out at you in Logion 4?
It's a different take on the first shall be last and the last shall be first. I'm not sure I get it. I mean,
one of the things that it makes me think of is in Jesus's time, children were not accounted to have status. Mm. And the older you are, the greater the status you had.
Ah.
And so that's just one thing to keep in mind. It may not be the fullness of what he intends to say, but it certainly would have been something on the top of the mind of the people first hearing the saying.
Which is kind of the opposite of where we come from in our timeline.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I like it. Can you see all the status here?
The room is full of status. Now, Jeanette, why don't you ask your question, but remember to look up and look at the microphone.
Is my quote, place of life. I didn't know what he's talking about there. So please explain.
Well, I'll do what I can. There's no fully explaining the Gospel of Thomas, which is part of the joy of the Gospel of Thomas.
Yes.
So one of the commentaries says that the place of life that Jesus may be referring to kind of coming out of the non-duality of God. So recently coming from being with God and not yet fully adjusted to this dualistic hell we find ourselves in that has such things as addiction and coffee and death. And, you know, and a cultural thing too is that a 7-day-year-old infant is still not fully connected and belonging in the world. And that it's at the 8th day, they're like, okay, it's not gonna die. We can name it. We can circumcise it if it's a boy. It can be brought into the community officially. And, you know, that partly has to do with the proportion of infants who died within the first week. Don't get too attached to that child, which is very different from our capacity to name an infant still in the womb. And, you know, and the realization that mothers who miscarry grieve the loss of a child. And that is real and genuine. They come from a harsher time where you can't afford to do that because you're just going to be grieving all the time. So place of life, a sense of non-dualism, a perfect, pure non-dualism with God, oneness with God. Which is not how the culture would have seen it. Because these were the children who don't get too attached. Don't even name them. What else? Well, I'll tell you one of the things that I see in it. I have long wrestled with the idea of innocence. Not that it exists, but that it's a linear movement from innocence to experience. And it just ends in cynicism. You start with innocent and naive, and you move to experienced and cynical, and then you die. Now, that is what I have observed many people do. And I have observed myself as well. And yet, I'm not sure that that's the best way or the most real way. And there's a poem that I wish I brought with me because that would have been useful. And I think it's called, I think it's by Wendell Berry possibly. And I think it's called The Mad Farmer Liberation Manifesto, which is kind of a strange name for a poem, but it's kind of a strange poem. And by strange, I mean wonderful. But part of the poem talks about being innocent and kind despite knowing all the facts. And so that sense of an aged person who maybe has gone through the whole spectrum and is now at deeply experienced and awfully cynical, and is now whispering to the 77-day-old infant, tell me about God. And that kind of deep return to innocence that the aged person can see, perhaps, in the 7-day-old infant, that's just easier to see in the baby before the baby gets colic, because then it's harder to see the baby. And thinking that maybe the end is in fact at the beginning, and the end is a return to innocence, despite knowing all the facts, still choosing that level of love and peace, not because you don't know any better, but because you've seen the alternatives. And this time you're choosing it.
Well, actually, I think you should choose it before you get that close to death. I mean, I sort of feel that life is what you make it. And it's your choice if you want to be miserable or have good things to think about and do and good people to know and do things with. So that's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work 100%, but we try. We can try.
There's another saying that says the more you know, the more you realize how much you do not know.
That's true, too.
So as you get closer to the end and you realize how much you do not know, that is a source of innocence.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. That is mm-hmm. beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Humility.
Yep.
That we don't get to know it all.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Humility. That's a good term. Yeah. That we should all.
Hard to exercise.
We should exercise that. Yes. Capability in ourselves a little more often, right?
Well, we have to hope we have that capability.
Yeah.
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with the word humility, because I feel like it is often used to keep people down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And mm-hmm. it's usually used against the people who already have plenty of it.
Down. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's usually ignored by the people who could really use more of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a term used often by the powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the way I would want to define humility is knowing your place in the cosmos as being no greater and no lesser than it actually is.
Mm-hmm. Which is not easy either.
Mm-hmm. No. No, but some people need to be lifted up by humility.
Yeah, but that humility goes along with respect. You have to have respect for yourself and other people, you know, and then the combination works, and you know, it's healthy.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
Humility is a word that you, I think, can't really ever apply to yourself. Somebody else may think it of you possibly, but
well, I think you can apply it to yourself. You have to try to be, you know, relatively, you have to have humility and try to exercise it, I think, on yourself.
You can be it, but you don't refer to yourself that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanna challenge that just a little bit, Marilyn.
Okay.
I think that a very popular way to understand humility is to say that you are not actually allowed to own the strengths and skills and talents that you have. You can display them. You can work to embody them, you can practice them, you can hone them, but you're not actually allowed to list them out. And the tricky thing about that is that that can be a very slippery slope to not owning them, not embodying them, and not recognizing yourself for the absolutely fabulous child of God that God made you. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky, because it punishes the people who need to be lifted up. And so when it comes to humility, because now we're talking about, it's kind of meta. It's sort of the conversation about the conversation. I think it would be safe in mixed company to talk about it as the art you're trying to cultivate. Mm-hmm. And it's anyone to guess how close you are to the final goal. Mm-hmm. But it's an art you're trying to cultivate.
Yeah, I think the problem with actually listing them is that you tend to boast about them. And it's like St. Paul in a lot of his chapters warns, people to not boast, mm-hmm. And because that's filling yourself with pride, and you're talking about your pride, and you don't want to do that, in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Because pride is a sin.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's, Marilyn, I think that it's tricky. Like, it's tricky, and we're allowed to disagree. And so, having said all these things, you can still be like, yeah, no, I still don't think you should say you're humble. That's fair. That's fair. Because it's complicated and it's tricky.
I can't see any problem in saying, I truly feel humble before God.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That works for me. Mm-hmm. But when I look around in the world and I think of the quote, goodest, which is not really a word, people that I have met, and I can think of two, they make me feel extremely humble, but it's still not a characteristic that I would say, if you can use it about yourself, then you are not. That's the way I could think about it, I think.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
So then by that metric, by that measuring rod, I'm not humble at all.
But that's you saying that.
Well no. By what you have just said, you said that if you can say it about yourself at all, then you're not it. By that measuring rod, then I'm not it. Because quite honestly, humility is something that it's an active part of my spiritual life. I feel like I've made great strides in it. Oh, if you had met me 20 years ago, it would have been ugly. And I want to own how far I've grown with that. I've grown in many ways, with many skills and many abilities and many of my God-given talents. But my sense of humility, I think, has grown and expanded and matured. And it's something that I actively wrestle with. And when I do something that makes me think, oh shit, did I just mess it all up? Because I wasn't humble, because I had too much pride, because I was a hypocrite. Was I a hypocrite? Was I not a hypocrite? These are things that I actively wrestle with in my life as a priest. And on the whole, I think that I am actually remarkably humble. Perfectly humble? No. Getting there? Maybe. And that's what I actually think. I don't go around putting it on a flag, but then I don't put much on a flag. But if you asked me, Sarah, do you consider yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, a humble person? 0 being no, I am prideful AF. And 10 being, actually, watch me go. I'm so humble. I give myself an 8.
What's your definition of humility? I think I need a definition.
Okay. My definition of humility, actually, I just shared this, was knowing your place in the universe as being neither greater than you really are, nor less than you really are. Really being as God made you to be.
That's a good definition.
I think so too. And you use the word perfect. I don't think human beings are perfect at anything. Only God is perfect. So
getting a 10 isn't possible.
Right, correct.
Right.
And getting a 0 isn't possible. Yes. We're only capable of 1 to 9.
No, but remember, it's a continuous scale. It's a continuum. You know, it's not discrete steps. So
right.
You can be 9.99, but perfection would be a 10.
I like
it. You can be close.
Sue, what were you going to say?
Just that it goes on to infinity.
A continuum does not have to go on to infinity. A continuum can be a finite length. I'm talking mathematics now, finite length, you know. But for every point in between, you know, there is a point there, you know, like on on your ruler, 12-inch ruler, right? It's limited by 12 inches, but any infinitesimal point with no actual matter taking up no actual space, you know, that's a continuum.
Well, and let's pause for a moment too and add another variable here. Our view is entirely subjective, and only God's view is objective. And mm-hmm. So if we take a step back, mm-hmm. okay, I give myself an 8.1 on my subjective ruler, but what would God give me? I don't know. Right. I don't know. And it goes back to an earlier conversation you were a part of, Marilyn, with, you know, we're all sitting on the box of gifts that God has given us. Well, if we take humility in this definition that I gave, then another way to understand that is, have you fully excavated the box of gifts that God has given you? Because that's part of who you are. And so if you know yourself completely and utterly in your proper place in the universe, then you're actually using all the gifts that God gave you. You're not denying anything. And so in that way, gosh, I shift on the scale regularly, because has God given me another gift that I haven't bothered to really thoroughly examine yet? Mm-hmm. Probably. I mean, it's a Wednesday morning and I haven't checked this morning. So probably.
But to deny the gift is not humility. Not true.
No, in this respect, I'm not looking at humility as a gift from God. I'm looking at humility as a measure for how self-aware I am and how honest I'm being, looking at my own self and looking at and developing the gifts that God has given me.
It's kind of like, it's not exactly the same, perhaps not even relevant, but I discovered a long time ago that when somebody gives you something, you should never, ever, ever say, oh, you shouldn't have. You say, thank you, that was so good of you. And it's something like that.
Mm-hmm. Jeanette, what were you going to say?
No, it had to do with what you were saying about humility. And also you want to avoid, measure how well you're doing at avoiding being prideful, because that's a sin to be, you know, full of pride of something in yourself. But I also wanted to comment on the fact that I don't think we can know ourselves all that well, and likewise other people. You know, you think you know somebody, and there's so many ramifications and aspects to different people. I don't think you come close to even really knowing them well, more than like 10% of who they really are. You know, I mean, even good friends, you think, you know, you can know them and maybe even think how they're going to react to different things. I don't think we know other people very well at all.
That is part of my standard funeral sermon. Mm-hmm. Everybody swims the vast ocean with God, and only God truly knows them.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm very grateful at knowing my good friends and the good things that I know about them and like and enjoy, et cetera, you know. But then, you know, they surprise you every once in a while and you realize.
Every morning when I talk to God and I'm doing my morning prayers, I say to God, help me to love you today and do your will. And that gets me through the day.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
One of the things that I say every morning after good morning is I want to listen today. I know you always speak. I want to listen.
Mm-hmm. Help me to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, friends, is a beautiful note to end on.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to put my bookmark in the correct place this time. So there is very little question that we are on Logion 5. Marilyn, just to let you know, I am going to be away next Wednesday. I'm going to be with my parish all day. And so I will be available and back with you the first Wednesday in April. Whereupon, Logion 5.
We look forward to it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. It's been great.
And Jeanette, if you come in, I will put this in the library for you.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
I'll lay it on a shelf so you can grab it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye, everybody. Have a good day.
Yes, you too. Thank you.